I'm Lisa Taylor, the president.
Blog Talk Radio.
Assess damages from deadly flooding in the eastern part of the Commonwealth. They'll meet with some affected families, and the president will make remarks. You'll also get a briefing on cleanup and recovery efforts from local, state, and FEMA officials. President Biden is praising the big economic and climate change bill passed by the Senate on Sunday. Michael Kastner has more.
Chatting with reporters at Dover Air Force Base, Biden called it all good.
No senior will have any on Medicare, will have a bill more than $2,000 for drugs, no matter what the costs are. That's a big deal, changing people's lives.
Two key inflation reports highlight the week ahead on Wall Street. The Consumer Price Index for July will be released on Wednesday after it jumped 9.1% for the 12 months it ended in June. Meantime, the Producer Price Index report comes out on Thursday. Ahmaud Arbery's killer is getting life in prison for his hate crime. Travis McMichael fatally shot the 25-year-old black man in 2020. He's one of three convicted of federal hate crime charges in the Georgia killing, including his father, Greg McMichael, and neighbor, William Roddy Bryan. Arguments in a lawsuit over Alabama's attempt to ban the use of gender-affirming medications to treat transgender minors will happen later this year. The 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has set a November 14th date. This comes after a federal judge back in May issued a temporary injunction to keep the law from being enforced. The suit, filed by several LGBTQ advocacy groups, argues the ban is unconstitutional because it intrudes on family rights to make medical decisions. The state of Alabama maintains the law is designed to protect underage children. Prosecutors are expected to wrap up their case today in the North Texas honor killing trial. Yasser Saeed would get life in prison if he's convicted of shooting his daughters to death in 2008. Dallas County prosecutors say Saeed was angry his daughters were dating American boys. Defense attorneys say police botched their investigation because they only focused on Saeed and no other suspects. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Hi, I'm Dan Cuneo, CEO of Lexicon. So you went to law school, passed the bar, and joined a firm, or even built your own. Now, are you finding out that you went through all that just to wind up doing more administrative work than actual law practice? Lexicon can help. Lexicon is a legal software and technology provider with over a decade of experience streamlining administrative tasks like timekeeping, HR, billing, client intake, and more. So you can focus on maximizing billable hours and increasing client satisfaction. Lexicon allows you to manage your entire practice from anywhere in one comprehensive platform. Retaining clients and managing cases is what you do, but Lexicon makes it easy to manage them in one place. Increase efficiency, bill more hours, and focus on doing what you do best, practicing law. Call 855-4-LEXICON or visit lexiconservices.com/go to learn more. Sign up before Labor Day to receive free implementation and training. lexiconservices.com/go.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Monday. Sunny skies and high temperatures in the upper 80s to low 90s in selected areas. We'll have a little bit of wind out of the north to northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. For tonight, mostly clear skies, low temperatures back down to about 59 to 60. For Tuesday, partly sunny skies and a little cooler, high temperatures in the low 80s with the chance of light rain showers moving in Tuesday night, lows back down to about 58. Wednesday, chance of showers and thunderstorms in the morning, turning to partly sunny skies by the afternoon. High temperatures around 71.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Get Big Out Loud Radio, where we explore living the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life with me, Carrie Knutson, and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Are your thoughts keeping you small? Are you ready to get big? I will offer you ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. Explore what is keeping you small and how to shift your behaviors in order to get big. Learn what is possible for you. Get ready to get big and live life out loud starting now.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Okay, welcome for a super-duper version of Get Big Out Loud. This is Carrie Knutson's show. So here's what I love about this. So let me just read this to everybody, and then you're going to hear throughout the show how Carrie is actually living this. What I love to do is I love to be able to work with people like I get to do 24/7 that have a vision for their lives and then that walk the talk for the vision. I love this. And what you hear from us and what you hear from us today is how that happens regardless of what you may be up against. So this is Get Big Out Loud. This is, listen to this, living the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life. And Carrie and I, we have fun. This is her show, but this is what she's bringing to it today, harnessing hope in uncertain times. Now, here's what I want to say about who she is. This is somebody that is out in the world. She is out in person. She is a top, most sought-after speaker. She is somebody that understands what it means to understand the psychology of counseling. She's a mother. I haven't heard her do this yet. Closet rapist, rap artist. But she's also that person that's the explorer. More than that, she has decided to study the ups, the downs, the inside outs of emotions. That is called emotional intelligence. So when you hear her speak, or you look at her extensive experience, or you work with her in a coaching program, or you want to improve, you are going to get somebody that understands what it's like to create this beautiful web to provide people what they need. Today, this is big, because are you able to harness the hope that you need in uncertain times? Carrie, this is a big one. I mean, were you like in my meditation with me the other day?
I write and I speak on everything that I need to learn. And I'm a constant student for that. So yeah, I might have been in your mind as much as I was in my mind, because it's the feeling of uncertainty. How do we keep hope alive? So all of those things really came together this month for me, and I wanted to take a deep dive into that topic. And thank you for the beautiful introduction to the work I do, because I do think Walking the Talk and Get Big Out Loud, the whole thing we're trying to embody on this show is, how do we show up in the world to get big? So even in uncertain times, even when things feel hopeless, even when it's hard, and how do we uncover the complexities that we're living, and how do we do it with some humor and fun, and how do we keep and connected to our humanness too? So you just did a perfect setup for today.
So I got to tell you what I really am getting off on these days is these little GIFs that you can get. So I like send them to Linda and Jessica, you know, in the strangest moments, right? You know, I sent Linda one yesterday of this little baby falling back on a bed, right? And I had a typo in it, because I am not the greatest when it comes to these texting things, because I had just finished playing a little match of table tennis, right? And I was trying to explain to her that I entered the day yesterday in a way that I had not before. And what that had to do with was hope. It had to do with the whole range of hope. And I wanted you to address this, because you have made some decisions recently that I'm so proud of you for doing, but it represents you. I'm not surprised, because you are bold, Get Big Out Loud. But without hope, it's kind of like our boneless goes down like some black hole.
Yes, and the reason it's important to talk about hope, especially in uncertain times, is because the first thing to go when we get scared, overwhelmed, frustrated, or we feel like we have no control, hope, I like to think about hope as this light that we have to protect, and it's easily blown out. And the bigger things get, it feels like the smaller that flame of hope can get. And the idea of protecting it, nurturing it, cultivating, harnessing the power of it, it might be small at times, but it's mighty, especially in the face of change, uncertainty, chaos, and all the things, not only globally, because we can easily get swept up into that, but all of us are living very personal, having very personal experiences, living our lives that also, like when you think about the changes that we're facing as people on a global level, you can also say, well, I'm facing changes as a person who just turned 50, or who's making a life transition with my job, or who's trying new things, or who's having different kinds of losses. So I think, while yes, we can also easily talk globally about things, this is really about to us as people, as humans trying to get through our lives, as trying to manage things and go through changes, figuring out when things get chaotic or uncertain, how do we harness hope? And how do we utilize it to help us through these changes? So I do want today, I want to talk about global things, but I also really want people listening to think about you as a person.
Thank you.
And how you are engaging in your life and the complexities that you face as a human being.
I want to talk about that, too, because that's where the buck stops, really, for me. I mean, isn't it the old, what is that story? Isn't it the old airline story? Hello, if the oxygen thing puts on, put it on yourself first, kind of, right? Because if we don't have it on ourselves and we can't really harness this at this level, at the individual level, it's extremely hard to do at other levels, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. And it's interesting, though, the instinct that we have to put the oxygen mask on everyone else first or to help others first is very important to think about our instinct to, especially I think we're culturally conditioned to put other people first. It might be selfish to think about yourself in that way. Or also I think the narrative is we're all supposed to be exhausted, stressed out, busy, overwhelmed. Like, that is kind of the acceptable social narrative. So if you're not, something's maybe wrong with you because the rest of us have work to do. So I always think about if someone said to you, hey, how are you doing? You should say, oh, I'm busy. You know, or you could say, I'm crazy busy if you want to amp it up. But very rarely do we hear someone say something like, you know what? I'm doing really well. I'm finding ways to foster some really good self-care practices. Like, I got up today, had a great breakfast, had some time to really think about things. I'm enjoying a slower pace of life. I'm really connecting to what's important. If someone said that, you'd be like, must be nice, because the rest of us are busy, stressed, overwhelmed, and working our tails off. So there's no space, even if you're like, yeah, I'm doing really good. Sometimes we do want to say, oh, yeah, I got super rough out there. So we can relate to others, because the narrative is you better be stressed out, overwhelmed, and busy. You know, busy is a way sometimes to show our worthiness. I'm busy means I'm worthy. So can we have to, like, check in on the social narrative? And that's why kind of it's hard to talk about slowing down, looking at things that are complex and having a longer time frame, finding ways that we do nurture ourselves so that we can show up to face the world, the day, our lives, in whatever way. It's creating a different narrative around that. It can be difficult.
Yeah, but see, this is not just something you talk about, and I alluded to that. This is something you live and breathe, and I am so glad you're bringing the conversation to this, because here's what we know. When we're in the energy of what you just described, there are other, for lack of a better word, there are other negative energies that cannot get in. Like, mm-hmm. if I'm in that energy you just described, I am not replaying over and over and over again. Okay, I'm just going to make a true confession. I was actually doing this before the show, so I caught myself. I am not playing over and over and over and over and over again. Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You. See, I'm not doing that. I mean, I play music in my room, and I try not to make it loud, and I don't use my headsets because I live in the headsets. And I just caught myself before the show. I'm like, how many times did I hit the repeat button to listen to that silly can't cuss song?
So are you making changes not to listen to it? Enlarging your music circle of things that are niche or give you hope?
I have like 4,000 songs on my song list. But I got caught in this morning. You see, if we're not aware of what you're talking about today, we can get caught in an old pattern.
Yeah, I love that figure, the caught in your pattern. And I think those are those unconscious things that we get caught up into, the way we think, the way we believe, the way we act, what we're drawn to, what we accept. And sometimes it's really good to analyze, and it's funny that you bring up a song, because I'm just thinking about sometimes how songs fit our mood or like reinforce if we want to be mad. Like, I'll listen to a good Nine Inch Nails song if I feel like being mad about it, like, you know, whatever. Or if I want to, like, have a good cry, I'll listen to Sarah McLachlan and, you know, be like, oh, Sarah, you know, whatever. But sometimes we reinforce those things and we look for that. And sometimes we need that. But it is good to look at, do some of our unconscious beliefs serve us? And around the idea of feeling overwhelmed, scared, sad, dealing with uncertainty, sometimes what happens when we get in our unconscious belief patterns and then in their unconscious action patterns, we start to believe things like, you know, what can I do anyway? It's all so overwhelming. And then we start to feel like, well, then I'm just going to disengage because it doesn't matter anyway. And then that gets reinforced by, like, see, more stuff happens and I don't have any sense, so I'm just going to let it go. Like, it reinforces those kind of thoughts and those behaviors get reinforced if we don't stop and really there's a great quote that says, if you make the unconscious conscious, or sorry, it's until you make the unconscious conscious, it will control your life and you will call it fate. And that's a Carl Jung quote. Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will control your life and you will call it fate. And I love thinking about that, because sometimes we do feel very fatalistic. Like, it's all written. There's nothing I can do. It's so overwhelming. Or we can't see past the moment of our circumstance. We can't see past the pain, the suffering, the disappointment, the lack of understanding, the meanness, whatever it is. Sometimes in those moments, we can't see past to what could be. And getting stuck in those moments is really where a lot of us could use the time to stop and go, all right, I'm in this moment. How can I engage my conscious mind to think to the next moment or past what I might normally do that keeps me in the cycle of staying stuck, disengaged, overwhelmed, unaffected, unhappy, or also that keeps me in the cycle of not asking for help, thinking I should go it alone, trying to keep the weight of the world on my shoulders, thinking I'm a superhero when I'm a human being. So that's, again, another cyclical pattern that keeps us stuck, and it's right on the edge of, if you could bring your conscious mind right on the edge of opportunity, change, progress, hope, all those things that we're looking for. But I see a lot of people, myself included, like, oh, I'm back in my cycle. I had the opportunity. It's like a rotary. It's like the rotary that you can't get off. Yeah. Sometimes you're looking for that exit and you miss it. Right? That's a good way to think about it. And it's the human response. But what we're talking about is, how do we build that consciousness that when we get to the point of the off-ramp, we can take it?
Oh, my God. You just brought us on. I want to get to this real quick, because I want to really bring out the relationship between hope and fear right now, because this is really an underpinning, and then you nailed it. You said it. Okay. So maybe you all are thinking, what has this got to do with hope? What has it got to do with how to overcome this? Okay, let me just be clear. Why would I listen to a song like that over and over again? There are a couple of reasons, right? Underneath it, when you look at it, it obviously is a reminder for me of a time. That song came out in 1990, and I had made a horrific mistake in my relationship, my long-term relationship, and I knew it. I knew that I was on a pathway that I didn't know how to reverse. I didn't know how to apologize. I didn't know how to bring back a 17-year relationship. Do you see? That song hit the airwaves. So now, why am I listening to that song? Because since 1990, I have since resolved that relationship. You know, I have since come to a place of fear and downtrodden to hope and inspiration. But we get caught in the cycle of an energy, and that is fear. And that role of fear plays a part, doesn't it? What role does fear play? Because I love what you said. We have to be awakened and aware. We have to understand, like for me, I had to say, okay, are you going to really hit the repeat button now for 5 times on that song? No, I'm going to now play Titanium.
Your human response, you go back to those places. You evoke feelings. Sometimes we're not quite done processing things yet, so we go back. But sometimes, it's amazing how broad our human experience can be, that we can hold two things to be true at the same time. I had a relationship in the past. I messed it up. This was the 17-year-old version of me that needed this at this time. And now, look, I'm looking back. Can I offer that person compassion? Can I say this is a time? And sometimes music, it's interesting that you bring it up, because music can really act as a trigger to bring us back to a time and a place faster than a lot of people like to admit. And I mean, if you're listening right now, you can think about what's the song, but if you hear it, you go right back. And it's our ability to kind of transcend time and space. So when you're doing that, part of you might be wanting to heal that 17-year-old girl who did that thing and was at the time. And then also the moment of action, though, it can be also like, do I need to stay in this place for a little while? Is there something I need to go back there for? Is there then a way I can give myself a boundary on how long I spend there? or the purpose of it before I move on to my next thing. Like, it's not forgetting or closing up or dismissing what you learned from that moment and who you were in that moment. But I do think sometimes when we get scared or overwhelmed, our mind responds in heightened ways to those things. So they're very memorable. Trauma, overwhelm, things that like are really big, our brains just respond in a heightened way. And that's just a human reaction. So it's normal if you go back through your life, sometimes people pick life events, and if you say, tell me your life timeline or your life story, people will pick the biggest, most serious, you know, because, and they forget the little twists and turns in the road, but you pick the biggest. Sometimes I'll say, too, even if it's about a relatively easy thing, like tell me about a great memory in your life that doesn't have to do with graduating, getting married, buying a house, or having a baby. Because those are like the big things people go to. And then they'll stop and be like, another event? You know, and there's a bazillion
This is an indicator that I need to schedule a session with you. This is an indicator. But you see what you just pointed to? Let's talk about this, because this is really how we resolve big issues. This is what you do so well. Simultaneously, what did you say? We can have multiple things going on. So here's what you nailed. Simultaneously to that, I was in my first 3 months of sobriety, you see. So had I not been in that cycle, I would have not even understood the value of a painful song like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so on July 29th, I celebrated 32 years. And so you see, what you're really talking about is maybe I wasn't attached so much to that outcome. Maybe I was attached for the tears of gratitude that I had for being that awake and aware. Because if you're that awake and aware, aren't you now able to tap into the energy of hope, the energy of a future, the energy of not to be fear-ridden and limited?
Yes.
Because doesn't hope enable us to have unwavering faith? Hello, that's my word, right?
Well, preach, Dr. Pat, preach. And also congratulations on being able not only to say I have 32 years of sobriety, but say I'm willing to talk about that as something that turns people off, could that people judge you, could have a whole host of stories around that. But that's interesting, because it's something we want to talk about with like what diminishes hope is the idea of like I can't share who I am because I'll be judged. You're going to cancel me out. You're going to cancel me out. I don't share the same values as you or beliefs, or I've done something wrong, and then I'm not worthy. So sometimes that plays into it. So you being able, and now look at, that's not a big joke to say. I'm 32 years sober. Right. I did a lot of other things when I was not. I'm not proud of that, but look at me now. Like for some people, even saying I'm an alcoholic is huge. Right, they're still just thinking I might be. I might want to talk to someone about it, or my life isn't going the way I want to because alcohol is a problem. Like some people are at different places on the journey, and so you are at a point where you can take for granted and say, "Yep, I'm 32 years sober." But that didn't happen overnight. It wasn't like one day you were drunk and an alcoholic, and the next day you're like, "I'm getting sober." Like it probably was a journey on the roundabout, experiences and things that were happening, and then there must have been a turning point. And again, sometimes turning points are big and flashy, and they're like, this is the moment where it changed. But I think that for a lot of people, it's those quiet moments. It's those reflective moments. It's the point where your conscious mind says, I'm going to do something different. And it doesn't always start with a bang. Sometimes it starts with a tiny, small decision, right? There's something I'm going to do that I can sustain that's going to take me in another direction. But we tend not to focus on that. We focus on the loudest, busiest, most controversial things, and we don't take it down to the complexity of our experience. And I'll even say this just to, I guess, juxtapose this. Sometimes I talk about love. You know, we talk about the manifestation of love and how it shows up. Very rarely does someone on there, like, let's say you're getting married, and you say, I'm going to say, this is the day I'm declaring my love, and I'm getting married to you, like, in the ceremony. But a lot of times we get married in our hearts way before the ceremony. When our love comes up, and like, what day did you know you loved somebody? A friend or a lover, right, or a partner. What day did it happen? In what way? It probably wasn't like, hey, Dr. Pat, I loved you today. Today was the day. I figured out. Like, sometimes we're like, it's feeling evolved over time, and then it just happened. But it's the small, quiet moments that happen in our hearts and our minds where then big decisions play out. And so sometimes when we're dealing with our problems and our issues or the feelings of overwhelm that a lot of us have that keep us moving on, we're looking for that thing that will say, this will change my life. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to change it in a big way. And we don't, I don't hear another narrative out there that says, what if we did the smallest thing towards making a conscious decision around an action or a belief or thought that you have that might just change the trajectory the tiniest bit, and something that you could sustain in a way that felt authentic for you. And then you build on that for the massive change. I think we do it kind of the reverse. You're going to make a massive change and we give up and it's too much and we're overwhelmed. And so that kind of just wanted to bring that up as it's the tinier personal internal decisions that we make rather than the loud, bold, public things that I think truly make a difference for us.
Yeah, and let's talk about this because we are living in a time of uncertainty. And I had to make a, may I talk about this to you? I had to make a conscious decision not only about thinking about addiction and recovery, but doing shows with other people. Ellen Stewart and I do a complete show. Susan Dene does a show on it. I have a network that openly invites people to come on and talk about addiction, alcoholism, drug use. We're going to have a channel. Now, I will tell you this. I follow the Marty Mann version of recovery as opposed to being silent about it. See, I don't think the founders of any of the 12-step programs ever meant or ever knew we would be in the digital age, the problem that people are having now stemming from fear and uncertainty. You nailed it. And what is the outcome? You and I did previous shows on this. We comfort ourselves. And it's not just alcohol and drugs. It's food. It's whatever you, gambling, holy moly, right? I mean, I passed the casino the other day going to play in the tournament, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, there's standing room only in the parking lot, right? Well, no, I'm not saying these things are bad.
No, but you're speaking to the idea of numbing ourselves.
That's
right?
What I'm talking about.
What do we do when we're facing fear, overwhelmed, or inability to act?
Like, oh, we feel hopeless, Carrie. I mean, why would we do this? In your words, we've lost hope, and we don't know how to get it back. And that's why I think what you do is so brilliant, because what you talked about just before, 2 seconds ago, is understanding the dynamic root cause nature of something. That's why I said to you, I think I have to have a session with you because I don't even know if I can answer those questions. But isn't this part of the topic for today?
Yes. And with the harnessing the power of hope is so important because when we lose it, and I often think losing hope is an interesting thing because I feel like you can't, as a human being, it's like the pilot light. It might be small, but it's like, and we light it and we keep it going and we make sure because it runs the systems of our humanness, right? The pilot light keeps the house going, and the pilot light of our soul is humanity, is our hope, right? In ourselves and humanity and other people. And so the idea, I always think like maybe you can't see that hope is there, but it's still the ember, it's still there, and like protecting it, enriching it. What happens when we feel hopeless? Helpless, overwhelmed, uncertain, that idea of numbing is such a human response. How can I not deal with it? It is too much for me. So I'm going to numb myself with anything. And you can literally pick anything. And people like to say, you know, social media, and you can say, yeah, look at people, though, who, like, shop all the time, or look at people who gamble or eat or drink or whatever, anything to excess, things that could be comforting or fun or joyful. Then become, and I even think, honestly, we numb ourselves with work. People who work all the time is a socially acceptable way of numbing ourselves. And again, connected with our worthiness, well, because I'm busy and working all the time, I'm needed and necessary and important. We're looking for ways to feel something, and we numb ourselves out because what I'd like to say is, in between the feeling of like losing hope and overwhelm is so much complexity. And we're not really taught to play the long game of, like, I need time to figure this out. I need time to unravel this. I might need support to get from point A to point B. Also, I'm worth it. Again, the worthiness, and then how can hope help for the journey? Because if you have hope, you can wake up a little differently to face your day than when you don't.
I love it. Listen, first of all, I'm excited about the newly revived hope you're created and have created in your life. You're like my poster child. You have absolute, Linda and I just talked about you the other day, and I might be able to share that with you in a minute. But you are the person now that has stepped out and said, I am really here to help people full time now. I am out in the world now. I'm coming out. I'm speaking out. I really feel my calling again. This is, I've heard you do this. You talked about it, and then you did it. But this is part of what you do. I want to take a minute. You help people with everything we're talking about today and everything we've ever talked about. But most importantly, I want folks to know how they can connect with you and get a hold of you. What is the best way for people to really see all of the things you are now stepping back out into the world doing again, but also the work that you do that you can help them?
Yes, I love, thank you for that setup. So really, what I'm a therapist by training, and a few years ago, I was sitting in my office, and I'm like, there's so many things around psychology that could be helpful that people, I could reach so many more people than if I waited them for them to come in my office. Could I come out? So I talk about what I do is taking psychology off the couch and bringing it to the people. And the idea, too, of psychology has to be for something that's wrong with you, or it has to be mysterious, or there has to be a lot of clinical words involved or a diagnosis. I want to take that out, too, because I think applied psychology can help us in all sorts of ways. So the idea of everything that I do, no matter if it's talking about emotional intelligence or customer service or authentic leadership, it's about how we use our minds in conscious ways to connect with people, solve problems, feel better, you be more effective, connect in ways that are meaningful and important, and that I truly believe that all of us are meant to do some really important work.
Yeah.
And we can't do the work if we're shackled by fear, overwhelm, imposter syndrome, guilt, the past. And I feel like it just makes us small. So the whole idea of get big is how can we bust through those things to show up, because the world needs what you have to offer. It's desperate for it. So everything that I do, training, consulting, coaching, a show, anything like that is around the basic idea of like how can we show up and use psychology to make our lives better.
I love this. We're going to take a short break because here's what we're going to do when we come back. Are you ready for this, everybody? I'm going to give you another piece to the sobriety story, and it's not going to be what you think, but it has to do with what Carrie's getting ready to talk about, passive hope and active hope. Do you know those are like a thing? Do you know those are a thing? What gets in the way of hope? What is a hope buster? You know, like a crust buster, like crust busting? What is a hope buster? There are those, and is it possible for you to be able to figure it out yourself? Now, I will tell you this. That wasn't my case. But why did I stay with this idea to clean up my life? Why did I do that? And why was it more than just that? I was changing a legacy. A mom that was an alcoholic and a drug addict when she had me, committed suicide when I was six, buried all my sisters, including my birth sister, my stepmom. What was it that was up in my face? What was it? And what did I have to ask of my first month in the walls, in the chairs of Alcoholics Anonymous? What did I have to say to my male sponsor? And what did he do for me to keep me in the game? It's all about hope. Wait till you hear what he did. Amazing man. Wait till you hear what Carrie is going to tell us about this. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Not just talk. Conversation for profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Radio.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. I got to tell you, if you have not met Carrie Knudsen, if you have not connected with her, you got to call her. You got to email her, because this is not just a conversation. This is passion, purpose, and action. If you go back and you listen to some of the shows we've already done, honestly, I am hoping that she sits down with me and we take these past shows and we write a book for her and we get her a book agent, because this is somebody that doesn't just talk about it. Listen, give out your website again, because this is how people can get a hold of you, right? I want to make sure they know how to reach you.
Yeah, totally. It's Knudsen Speaks, and everything I do is under Knudsen Speaks, and that's Knudsen Speaks, S-P-E-A-K-S, sorry, SPEAKS.com. Knudsen Speaks social media, my website. That's how you can find me and connect with me for anything. And also, I like just to mention that all my stuff isn't like out of the box. Everything is customized. I like to work with people in different ways, teams, groups, individuals, keynotes, breakout sessions, like any kind of things. Like, I love to really customize the work I do to the need that people have and the outcome that they want.
Yeah. And you walk the talk.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the short answer to the story. I was very fortunate, and I don't want to go into the whole backstory, because the reason I got a male sponsor is because I had shaved my head, Sinead O'Connor, had a hoodie on, was directed to go to a room. I went to the wrong room. I went to the men's meeting, had a hoodie on, didn't understand it was a men's meeting. And as I was walking out the door with my hoodie, no makeup, because I had just been physically abused from a relationship I was in. So I was black and blue, and, you know, people say, really, you, Pat? Yeah, me. But here's the deal. The guy grabbed three of us walking out. We all sat in the back, myself and two other guys, and he said, you, and you, I'm your sponsor. Big, hairy guy. Now, I was so scared. I pretended to be a man boy, because I look like a man boy, for weeks, thinking he didn't know, right? Because you're not supposed to have men. But here's the thing. He knew I wasn't going to buy into it. He knew it. And what he did is he gave me something called the Ninth Step Promises. Now, here's what I want to say to all of you, whether you're in the rooms of AA or not. He gave them to me, and he said, you need to memorize these. And I looked at him, and I said, seriously? How about the other two guys? Here we were. It was me, my Muslim buddy, and my Jewish guy buddy, all of us working with this guy. We went on field trips. But the promises are this. I'm going to just read you two of them. There are 12. This changed my life. This kept me coming. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor shut the door on it. We'll comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose self-interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work them. These are what saved my life. And if you can't tell me that these aren't about hope, I don't know what is, Carrie.
Oh, my God. So powerful. So powerful. Where can people find those?
Just Google the AA promises, Ninth Step Promises.
Okay. Because what you're speaking to there, like,
it's very emotional.
It's emotional. It's powerful. But the thing that I'm tying into with that is the idea of hope, because you have a chance. You can be forgiven. You can move past. So I think the idea of when we give up on ourselves and we lose hope, the message of, like, don't lose hope. You're redeemable. There's something in you. Life's worth living. You're possible. And life's not worth just living because life. You need to be a part of it. You're needed, you're important, you're necessary. Your contributions count. You're not worthless. And again, that worthiness piece of, like, am I worth getting better? Am I worth trying? Am I worth... Also, I think it brings up a good point too, like, so many people come from really hard situations. And again, you just rattled that off of, like, well, this is all the bad things that happened. That's like how we do that is our story, but you lived your story. You lived it. So now with time and distance, it's easy to say, well, I'm almost an addict, diet six, like you tell it like a story, but if you go back in time, the person who lived that story, it was a longer amount of time. It took a lot to handle it. And no wonder you kind of ended up where you did, given the circumstances. So when you think about your roundabout and the things that caused you to stay on there, and you're saying the moment wasn't was a loud bang, it was maybe that quiet moment that I said, here, read this, listen to this. And maybe even if you go back, it was you deciding to show up. Maybe even before that, it was deciding to sit there and pretend to be a guy and just sit in the room. Maybe for that, it was just wandering to get close to an AA meeting, no matter what door you open. Maybe before that, it was something inside you that said, you want to say, don't give up. Right? It's the quiet voice. It's like a whisper.
Thank you.
It's like a nudge. It's something that isn't, that hardly didn't even articulate. It's sometimes it's that feeling of like, you are worth it. Keep your hope. Let's find a way to light that up again. Let's get in a place where we can get supported. Mm-hmm. But it's so small, kind of what we think of insignificant moments that are momentous because they were the point of a shift, a small shift where you said to yourself, not necessarily somebody else, but you said to yourself, I am worth it. I'm going to figure something else out. It might be messy. It might not look good. I might have a lot of judgment that comes with it, but there's something in you, Dr. Pat, in that moment that got yourself there. And then something in you that kept yourself there and something in you that allowed you to listen and learn and grow. And now you tell it like, this happened, this happened, this happened. But if I go back to the Dr. Pat of the moment, there'd be a very different story.
Look, right? That's why I love talking about this because, Carrie, I want to really talk about this idea of putting hope in action, too, and I want you to address this, really. The reason you and I are here is because once I learned that, when I dialed that wrong phone number in 2003 and I didn't hang up, and within 10 minutes I had bought something like a $12,000 package for an Internet-only show, and I didn't blink. You see, because there was some part of me that had that beautiful hope for a future that I could have that was so different than what everybody else thought I could have. Because the bottom line is, I should have been a high-paid consultant in 2003, but I couldn't. So this is what I'm trying to say. We will get opportunities, and I would like you to address this because it does have to do with the passive and active hope. Every one of us, every day, gets an opportunity to bask in the fulfillment of hope. How can we talk to folks today just so they might get even a glimmer, even a few seconds of it, right? Because it is contagious. Can you talk to that, please?
So the difference between active and passive hope is something we need to talk about. And I want to make sure I get the author's name right of the book. I read the most wonderful book on this. Active Hope by Joanna Macy and Chris Johnston.
Yeah.
It was written like 12 years ago. I think my wonderful friend Elaine Grant turned me on to it, as well as the work of, I want to mention a few other people who are doing good work on this, Krista Tippett, who runs a podcast on being, and then Viktor Frankl, who is, Man's Search for Meaning is like the best book ever, who is a Holocaust survivor, who wrote a book essentially on hope and how we keep it alive. So all of these things play into it, but what I want to talk about now, the idea of active hope versus passive, which is what the book talks about, and I want to kind of extend it, is a lot of us are living in this passive hope. I hope things change. I hope someone else does it. I hope somebody else fixes it. And then if we're not certain that hope will happen, we're kind of like, but it probably won't. And also we take ourselves out of the equation because someone else should do something to give us hope. And I often think it's like waiting for someone to be like, have hope because here's the plan and it's going to work. And then it's great, now I'll have hope. Now I'll buy into it. But in life, we have to keep it for something that is uncertain, that may or may not work out the way we think it will, and something that we don't necessarily have control over. So we kind of, when we're passive, we're like, if it works out, and if you make the plan, and if you tell me it's all going to be good, then I can have hope. But if we ask ourselves to internalize it, active hope says, I have the power to do something. even and especially, I would add, if it's small. Because, again, we're trying to do these big grand things and then we fail, we're like, see? But we don't rely on the fact of, like, what gives me hope? What actions can I take towards building and harnessing the power of that, protecting it? What efficacy do I have in my life? And that's where I think where the table needs to get turned from passive to active. And I like the idea of hope. Krista Tippett said she wrote an article that said hope is a muscle, like flexing the muscle of hope. And again, I have to thank my friend Yvain Grant, who was like, hey, because I called her, I'm like, I'm thinking about hope. I'm thinking about how we can harness it. And she's a great person. We always rip off each other. And she's like, what about this? Do you know about this? So all of these resources are thanks to me. It's funny because I was thinking about this in my mind. And when I finally shared it with a good friend, she could reflect it back to me. And then I could get more articulate about what I wanted to say. And then I looked at all these resources about people doing the work. And I'm trying to put it together in a meaningful way, which is essentially what I do with everything. Right, put it together in a meaningful way. But the idea of active hope says, can you cultivate, enrich, and focus on things that give you hope in a way that is more realistic rather than pie in the sky and is also more personal than maybe what should give you hope than what does give you hope? And so I want to talk about like action and hope and taking action, because what I think happens, and studies have shown this idea of like taking action that helps us feel like we're effective, we have efficacy, we can do something. And so a lot of times when we get hopeless, we get numbed, we don't take action, we just like kind of wait. So the opposite of that is, how can I take action to help me build hope? And I just want to give like a quick example of something we're all experiencing right now. But you know the satellite that just went out in space is James. I got to think of the name of the satellite. Hold on. I wrote it down. I want to make sure I'm doing it right. Okay. The James Webb Space Telescope. So this is like a global thing that's happening. Right? We're seeing pictures from space that are like, is this a real picture? Like all these images that are coming down from the satellites are incredible. And I don't care if you think space is cool or not. I would double dog dare you to not be in awe of these images. And so this telescope is sending back these images. And what I feel like it's doing, the people that worked on that, when they started it, I'm sure hope be like, it had to start as a whisper. So I'm saying, you know what? I think we could build a telescope that we could launch really far into the universe that could send back high-resolution pictures. And then the shows are like, that can never happen. And what do you think that will cost too much? And who do you think you are? Do you have the right degree for that? How do you get the funding? And then you kill it. You kill the dream before the little flicker of hope, right? And so I'm wowed by the people that stayed in the room to be like, yes, we can, and we're going to try. And you know what everyone's experiencing now is the result of amazing efforts, yes. Trial and error, lots of time, things that weren't pretty, times when it wasn't going to work, and nobody wants to say that. They all want to look at the results, and that's what we get trapped in. Like, if the result is, yay, I'm for it. But no one wants to be in the work, the messy, long night, not pretty, failing. But what kept that team going to make that telescope work was hope. And now what it's doing in my mind when it's out there in the world, in the universe, sending back pictures of our universe, it's giving me hope. What? How big the universe is, my place in it, what's possible, how amazing science is. Like, I'm getting residual hope from that activity. But I want to go back to the people in the room. Again, the James Webb Space Telescope, those people had to start with a small flicker of hope, and now it's burning like this bright star. But that's just one example I want to give. That's on a global level of those people taking action. And then on a personal level, I want to give a little example. So for me, up to a few months ago, one of my daughters was in an elementary school. She was in fourth grade, and I got an email from a teacher, it was a group email saying, hey, we're wondering if some parents, could every parent just donate one book, or we're trying to get a class set, if you could help, that'd be great. And something in me was so mad when I read that. I'm like, here's a teacher having to ask parents to buy class sets of books so she can have a book group. And I was like, no, that is not right. And this wasn't even my a child is not in a teacher's classroom. A teacher should not have to do this. That is not right. And they have to wait one more second for a complete set. They should be new and beautiful. And every kid in that school should be able to read whatever book they want. I got all fired up. And it's funny because it's the same day I was feeling so hopeless about the state of the world, what everything's happening. Especially my husband's a teacher. I work in the school as a school counselor. My kids, I was just feeling like the way the public was treating teachers. I had a whole bunch of feelings that day.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I have feelings with you just mentioning it.
Yes.
I could see why that would be, what?
Yes.
What do, right?
If we care about kids, we have to care about teachers. We do. We have to support them, nurture them, give them the freedom and autonomy to do their job and teach. That's what I have been liking to say. Just because you cash a check at a bank doesn't mean you can run a bank. Just because you sat in a class doesn't mean you know anything about teaching. So that's what got me riled up. So I got this email, and I'm like, no, we're not getting one book at a time. We're getting all the books, and we're getting them next week. And I literally... I'm like, I'm starting a fundraising campaign. I want this. I called a bookstore, a local bookstore. I'm like, here's all the books for you. How much is it going to cost? And they're like, here. And I'm putting them on order because I'm getting them. And then I said, hey, parents, we need, and this crazy thing, we needed like $600 to make it happen. In the grand scheme of things, is $600 that much money for a school? No. So I was like, I need $600 as soon as possible, and I need you to be part of this. And I said, and whatever we get at the end, I'm giving the rest. I'm going to get out of my savings and do it. Do you want to be part of something? In 2 days, I had over the amount I needed. I had the books there the next week. The funny thing is, I dropped them off at the school that the teacher was teaching, so I never even saw that teacher. But when I delivered those books and walked out of school, I'm like, something is right in the world today, and I had something to do with it. And it didn't fix everything that's wrong with education, how we treat our teachers, but it was something that was right. And that little spark of hope kept me going to then have energy to take action on other things. But I did it from inside. It's active hope that we light that up from inside, then we sustain it, harness it, and use it to take action that moves us forward.
Yeah. And the antithesis would have been you just complaining.
Yes.
Right? Because you see, the universe is so smart, like smarter than a third grader. Well, actually, third graders are pretty smart now. But so smart to know that somebody like you would get that email and care.
Yes.
That it was your hopeful energy that made it happen.
Well, the beautiful thing is the teacher sent me an email back. She goes, I don't even know you. And here you've done this thing for me, and it restores my hope in humanity. It allows me to teach these groups that I'm really motivated to teach on these books that I think will be great for kids. So that little action created another action. And it's not that we knew each other, that we liked each other, that we were friends even. It's like something had to happen, and I was going to do something about it. And it, in the grand scheme of things, if you want to judge it, well, that's like a pebble, and you know we need a boulder. But the pebble counted, because you know what?
It makes
the ripple. The pebble counts. The pebble counts, and we have to keep that in mind as we're going through our lives. The pebble counts just as much, if not more, than the boulder, because it's those small things that we do with great love that can have great meaning and impact, and it also fuels the fire of our hope. And that's what we need to be able to continue to live in this world and take meaningful action. It starts here. And that's the kind of thing that builds that up, keeps the pilot on, keeps it stoked, whatever kind of analogy you want to use.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that story because, see, sometimes we think that not only are we hopeless, we're helpless. And, there is a distinction. I want to say to everybody, and we're not going to really dig deeper into it. You know, maybe Carrie will do a different show about it. But, you know, there are both that operate. And, you know, the reason we're talking to you all about it today is because we don't know exactly what you've been through. But we know about it because we've been through it. You know, we've been through our own businesses during COVID, myself and network. We hope is what drove me to make sure we got the funding that could have been available to us through COVID, you know, but it doesn't mean we don't feel things, right? So I just want to be clear. You can be angry about something. You can still be fired up about something. You could still feel sad about something. But there's a difference between being, you know, feeling sadness and becoming sadness. Right?
That's true.
And today what you've brought to the surface, though, for all of us are, man, great examples, but more than that, this is what we need now. And Carrie, I want to just ask you a couple of things. Please let folks know again how they can find out more about you. And I would love to know, as we bring this full circle, what do you want to leave people with? What do we want the takeaway? So again, please give out your website and how people can contact you.
Yes. So you can find me at KnutsonSpeaks.com, KnutsonSpeaks, KnutsonSpeaks.com. And I'm on social media under KnutsonSpeaks, too. You can find me on Instagram or Facebook. And what I would like to leave you with, and I'm going to use my notes though, because I've got two quotes there that I think are really important. And one is this idea of, there's a Helen Keller quote which just speaks to this beautifully. And this is what she says. I am only one, but I am still one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And I will not refuse to do something I can do. And that is the power of the person and the moment and the belief, all wrapped up into this quote, because I love it. I can't do everything, but I will not refuse to do something that I can do. And I can do. If you have that hope, then there's still belief that you can do that. And the idea to me, the world is so complex. Don't reduce it to a soundbite. Don't reduce it to a Republican, Democrat, pro or con or whatever. Like, we have to be more willing of ourselves to engage in the complexity of ourselves and our experiences and other people in order to have hope. Because again, that whole idea of shutting down, cancel culture, it's too much, it's not happening fast enough. Can we broaden our kind of perspective on what it's going to take to keep hope alive and have hope? And a lot of times too, when we know our why in the world and what we're about and we have some belief in our worthiness, it's easier to have hope despite all the circumstances. So I do think coming from a place of I'm worthy, my contributions are worthy, I have something to give, even if I've been told otherwise, maybe by society, by my family, by whoever, I've got something going on here, and I'm worthy, and I can have hope that I can do that. And the last quote I just want to share related to that is a beautiful quote by Viktor Frankl. Those who have a why to live can bear almost any how. Those who have a why to live can bear almost anyhow. What's your why? Connect it with your hope. Talk about it. Think about it. Make tiny changes. And don't give it up. Because that's to me, the when we lose our humanity, don't give it up. Find a way to keep it strong, protect it, and then harness it to do the things you were meant to do in this world. That's what I want to say.
And for those of you that don't know who Viktor Frankl is, please go ahead and look at Viktor Frankl. You can Google him, you can understand his story, and you can understand exactly the way I referenced Carrie today on the show. This is a man that took his life, regardless of the circumstance, never gave up, walked the talk, lived through hope, and created a story and a legacy that rocked the world in terms of what we can do with belief, hope, faith, and mind. Carrie, thank you so much for today.
Thank you, Dr. Pat. That was a beautiful wrap-up and beautiful way to talk about Viktor Frankl. And I do hope everyone looks him up. And I do hope that you take some things from today's show that will resonate personally with you, that you can take them out into this uncertain world and make those changes that need to be made and continue to keep your humanness about you. Don't give up.
Yeah. As we'd like to say, hope rocks. Thank you all for tuning us in and turning us on. We'll see you next time. Thank you, Carrie.
You have been listening to Get Big Out Loud Radio, where we explore the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life with me, Carrie Knutson, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will help you to know which thoughts are keeping you small in order for you to get big. Get big and live your life out loud. For more information, visit KnutsonSpeaks.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KMUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Monday to you, Benny Mathers, here for a look at your alternative talk AM 1150 traffic update around the sound. Well, good thing, folks, so far no major blocking or accidents to report at the moment. Just a small little stop and go issue on 405 northbound around Northeast 8th Street in Bellevue, running through the 520. But everywhere else, traffic's actually looking pretty good. Enjoy your Monday. And stay tuned for another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, the Dr. Pat Show Talk Radio to Thrive By and How to Live a Happily Ever After Life with Echo Bodine. NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. President Biden is praising first responders for their actions during deadly flooding in eastern Kentucky. During a briefing, Biden said the federal government is committed to doing everything possible to help flood victims. Biden joined the briefing on cleanup and recovery efforts from local, state, and FEMA officials. He saw some of the damage during a helicopter tour of the affected areas. The Senate Majority Leader is applauding the big Democratic economic and climate change bill that was passed on Sunday. Chuck Schumer noted the bill will lower prescription drug prices.
For years, people have said, why can't you go after the drug companies and reduce the cost of prescription drugs? This bill has major, major limitations on what pharma can do.
Schumer ripped Republicans for blocking a separate bill that would lower and cap the soaring cost of insulin. Mayor Eric Adams is hopeful the White House will send resources to help New York City serve migrants arriving from Texas. Adams says he's been having low-level conversations with the Biden administration.
And now we're going to have a higher-level conversation with the White House, and they have appeared to be extremely receptive to the needs, and they see what's happening in the city, and we're looking forward to those conversations.
The mayor says Texas Governor Greg Abbott is targeting New York City since many asylum seekers wanted to go to different cities where they have family. He called Abbott's actions mean and cruel, adding nothing is more anti-American than shipping people on a bus without direction or coordination. The family of Gabby Petito is filing a wrongful death lawsuit against the Utah Police Department. Lawyers representing the family say the 22-year-old would still be alive if Moab City police officers were properly trained to handle domestic violence situations. The department's accused of neglecting to provide proper resources during an altercation between Petito and her then-fiancé, Brian Laundrie. Petito's remains were later found in Wyoming, with Laundrie listed as the only suspect. The family is suing the police for $50 million. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio. And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Monday. Sunny skies and high temperatures in the upper 80s to low 90s in selected areas. We'll have a little bit of wind out of the north to northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. For tonight, mostly clear skies, low temperatures back down to about 59 to 60. For Tuesday, partly sunny skies and a little cooler, high temperatures in the low 80s with the chance of light rain showers moving in Tuesday night, lows back down to about 58. Wednesday, chance of showers and thunderstorms in the morning, turning to partly sunny skies by the afternoon, high temperatures around 71.
Do you make a positive difference in the world? Do you have a talent, philosophy, base of knowledge, product or service that you know could help a lot of people if only you could reach them? Join Alternative Talk 1150's family of broadcasters and start walking down a fruitful path. As host of your very own program, dial 425-653-1150 and find out just how affordable it can be to have a show on 1150 AM. That's 425-653-1150. Alternative Talk, we have an opportunity waiting just for you.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Tune in to
Spaces
Unknowing Network, Communing with Your Soul, with Julio Rose and JoJo Rose, every Monday at 7 p.m. Pacific. On TransformationTalkRadio.com. Let your heart beat in the rhythm of your soul and guide you to new horizons and unlimited, infinite love.
I'm a wife and the mother of two kids. And when I get to work in the precinct house and put on my uniform, I can tell you, as a police officer, we're building partnerships. This should be happening everywhere. So the police should be reaching out to this community. And this community should reach out to the police. That's the way to make this a safer place.
Start the conversation and help stop crime. To learn the five things you can do, go to ncpc.org/preventviolentcrime. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next to you.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on for sure. I am so excited about the show today with Echo Bodine. And the reason I'm excited about it, I'm just going to kind of try to put it up here, Jacob and company. The reason I'm excited to talk with her is beyond being known internationally for her work, spiritual healer, and a writer, she's been on radio, television, NBC, everything you want to think about. Why? Because when you are called to a pathway in life, see, this is what I discovered this morning. Again, discovered it this morning. And you know, I love the way the universe kind of taps me on the head gently and then slaps me right up in the head with a big fat 2x4.
Yep, yep.
I love it. But when you're on a pathway, that is your pathway. Now, do we kick and scream about it, or is the kicking and screaming have less to do with the pathway and more to do with your fear of your pathway? So I'm going to tell you, for me today, it's my fear. And so when I think about, you know, happy to live a happily ever afterlife, when I think about this book and I go through here and I read the book, and we talk about spirits, where they are, why they haven't gone through, how they are in front of us. I can't help. I have to do it, Benny. I have to reference the latest, what I call, blockbuster hit that I think Netflix and Hulu had the guts to take out of the DC comic books. Like, they had the guts to actually do a series on the Sandman. Now, why am I saying that? Because when you decide to take that on, and you are going to show not just the Sandman, who is the realm of dreams, but then you're going to show the Sandman's siblings. One of them might be called the Angel of Death. She was amazing. But they walked you through a series in one of the episodes in Sandman of how death works. And when I read the book, and I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, this is why she's writing the book. You see, what I love about what I do is I can have one foot in our pop culture and the next foot in the afterlife. But here's what I want to say, and I want to ask my very special guest today, world-renowned psychic, spiritual healer teacher, ghostbuster. I'm a crust buster. She's a ghostbuster. When our pop culture starts to reflect what someone may have taken years to write and put in a book, I dare anyone to tell us we're not connected. Echo, thank you for joining me here today, okay?
Oh, my gosh, yes, of course. This sounds so exciting. Can you tell us more about the show?
Well, I don't want to give the whole thing away, but First of all, I want to congratulate the producers for not crazy deviating away from the original. Okay, mm-hmm. I just want to say that.
Okay.
But the second thing that's super important is they did do one deviation, but it actually was better.
Okay.
But what I loved about it was, just like you do in your book, And the way you capture us, the way that you talk about, when you talk about, for example, fear of flying, and you take us through almost heaven, the part about almost heaven in the book, mm-hmm. and you write about it so descriptively. And may I? Because this is what this series did visually. But when you go through here and you say things, my experience is that it's dark, empty void where souls wander around, waiting to be told that they are done suffering and go to heaven. Many of these souls are good Catholics or are committed to suffering as long as necessary, if it means they can eventually meet God or Jesus. See, you take us in there. That's what I will say to you about this. Because if they were going to demonstrate a comic character, which was so touching, this was one of these, I hate to even call it a comic character. It's like almost an embarrassment, because when you look into the deep realm, and when Sandman says at the end, I am the one, I control consciousness, I'm like, what?
Whoa.
There is so much that had to do with the transition from the earth skin
to
whatever the next place is. And when they showed the angel of death, she was kind.
Okay.
And this is what I love. It's not a mistake that I get to talk to you about this. And then Netflix comes out with that. We are all connected, aren't we?
Let's
start there.
Honey, we really are. We are connected. You know what? The greatest example of that was the pandemic. Oh, my God. I mean, we've never had anything like that on our planet, where we are all going through the same thing.
Yeah.
And we realize how connected we are. Yeah. We realize if we're infected with COVID, holy smokes, we can give it to any one of our brothers and sisters on this planet. I mean, yes. We are kind of getting chills after chills here. Holy smokes, girl.
Yeah. Okay. And you know what? Here's where we are. I love that you brought that up. Not only are we still connected, but COVID has never been more vibrantly alive than it is now. Hello. I can't keep track of my staff and who's coming in today, who was around. I mean, honestly, all of us. And I went through the whole 3 years without getting it. But what I love about this conversation with you, and I love the book, is how beautifully you give us what I call knowledgeable options.
Oh, good.
Right?
Oh, good. Because, hot girl, chilling everywhere.
Right? Who doesn't want to know what the heck is a ghost? And is that going to be what I am? So let's start the conversation out for you, because this has been your life's path. This is your soul's path.
Yeah.
This book has come out in a time where we need to talk about it. But I love what you say here, stories of trapped souls and how not to become one.
Mm-hmm.
I need to now listen to you, because I don't think any of us want to be that, do we?
No, we don't. Oh, we don't. You know what, Patty? Most of the ghosts that I've met are men. And that makes sense to me, because they don't want to talk about these things. They don't, you know, like, no, so many have said to me, like when I'm working with someone that's dying, and I've said, you know, have you thought about death? I mean, what are your thoughts about it? Oh, no, I don't want to talk about that. No. Even though they're on their deathbed, they don't want to talk about it, because it's scary, okay? Mm-hmm. But you know what, Patty? I have learned so much more since writing that book, because
I was going to ask you that question.
Yeah, honey, I've had 3 friends die in the last year, and these are people I'm close to, so I'm able to check in with them and find out. I was able to watch them, just kind of sit back and watch them, and it's been really interesting to see, okay, when she died, the most recent one, and this is one of us, people that believe like we believe. Okay.
Yeah.
So she goes to the hospital because she didn't feel good. The last thing she expected was to die. She thought she'd be going home, and boom, she died. Okay.
Yep.
her soul comes out of her body, and the first thing, and I've seen this a lot, is people think, okay, first is this a dream? Am I dreaming right now? See, my body's there, and I'm here. Okay, and they just kind of take a quick inventory of what's going on in their surroundings. I think I died. Oh, wow. Okay, wow. Look at all these people. Oh, my gosh, everybody's so sad. Oh, geez, everybody's freaking out. Oh, my gosh. And then you've got somebody either coming from the other side to talk to you, to help you understand what's going on, or they're already there in the room when you come out of your body, right? Okay. And so it was really interesting because she said specifically to me, okay, don't worry. I know what's going on.
Really?
But she said, I don't remember death. I don't remember that I've been through this before. So she said, it's going to take me a couple of days. Okay, so then relatives of her came. I think it was her mom that came, explained to her, yes, honey, you have died. Oh, okay. And all she was worried about really was her husband, because this was such a shock to him. Okay. So her mom kind of reassured her, no, people are going to come for him. And now we've come for you. And, you know, let's go on. And she said to me, Echo, there really is a light. And there was a group of people. When I went through that light, there was all these people that I know that are deceased. And they were so happy to see me. And she said, Echo, it was like I was born again. And she said, I need time. I need time because this is all happening so fast. Okay.
Sure.
And so, Patty, really, she had like, I don't know, honey. It was a couple days. You know, I would think, oh, should I check in on her? No, just let her be. Okay. And then it was, oh, you know what it was she did come and she'd say, wow, this is really a trip. And she'd say, this place is gorgeous. You know, I forgot how cool it is. She said, I'm so glad that people are watching over her husband. And then she said, I can't say much right now because I'm still, she said, I went through a 2-day process of clearing Earth's energy off of me.
Yeah.
And she said, boy, that's a heavy energy. And she said, so it took 2 days to just clear and clear. And she said, and now, excuse me, she says, I'm trying to get used to how light I am. She said, this is quite a transition that's taking place. Okay. And then Patty, what was really cool was I was riding on my bike, my recumbent bike, just poof, there she is.
Wow.
And I told her, I said, I can't go to your gym because I've got an interview. And she said, no problem. She said, here, grab a piece of paper. I want you to tell them some things. Okay. So I quick grabbed whatever I could find. And she literally stood there and dictated to me, thanked everybody for taking care of her husband. And you know, honey, I don't even remember now what she said anymore. I wrote it. I gave it to somebody that attended the funeral. It was her message to everybody that was at the funeral, which was really sweet. And my friend who took it to the funeral said, oh, my God, Echo, everybody knew it was from her. So I'm telling you, I'm learning cool stuff.
And that's why I was so excited to talk with you because, you know, I know these books get written a bunch ago, and then here we are. I want to take a short break, Benny and Jacob. When we come back, I want to really talk about this because I was reading your book, and I was reading your book simultaneously while I was watching this thing. And what was so fascinated about it and I don't want to give a lot away because for those people that watch it, but I was watching it, and I got to the episode where there was a ghost that did not cross over. And it was a very interesting, very critical part of the show because it was much more than that. So when we come back, I want to talk with, I mean, honestly, that's why you got to go see it. You got to see it. But I want to talk with you because there is the fear that we have. And you don't have to come from, you don't have to be Catholic to have the fear. You don't, right? I'm not saying. When we come back, I want y'all to think about, you know, what Echo has put in her book. I want you to think about this. If these are stories about trapped souls, what do you want to know so as not to become one? Because in the back of your mind, what are you thinking right there? We're going to take a short break, Benny. Jacob, when we come back, more about how to live a happily ever afterlife, fabulous guest, Echo Godin. We're not going to give you all the secrets in the book, but I'll tell you, when I opened up the book and I looked at reason number one, I said, oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Benny, let's go to a break. We'll be right back.
What if you could enter a sacred vortex of love and beauty, infused with the power of the earth and ascended masters?
Join myself, Dr. Georgia Herrera and Dr. Sharon Martin, and the Sacred Magic Show.
Bring in the mystical and sacred for healing, airing every third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You too can have your health and life challenges melt away.
Join now and feel your heart open up to the answers to your most important questions.
Tune into the Dr. Diane Show, where we explore revolutionary expansion of mind, body, and soul every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I bring over 20 years of expertise as a mindset warrior, perspective shifter, and unshakable optimist dedicated to helping you reach your wildest dreams in business, health, performance, and relationships. Join the discussion on the show. Learn more about me, Dr. Diane, and receive a free digital copy of my magazine at naturalnutmeg.com.
Hi, I'm Amber, your weekly host of the Heart Leader Podcast, where heart and mind align on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I'm here with co-host Austin, and we'd like to know, do you have a passion to make a greater global impact? Are you ready to embrace leading with heart and love? If so, join us and our global community of over 1 million strong on this journey to become heart leaders to change the world. Each episode brings heart-centered connection, building stronger relationships, communities, and businesses. Take a deeper dive into what it means to be a heart leader. For more information, visit www.srivera.org. We look forward to seeing you in the Srivera community.
Our ability to align with our true highest self and create freedom and prosperity is infinite. Take the journey back to me, a guided journey back to your true self in 40 days with me, Freedom Coach and Oracle Jeannie Gale Gray. Move from overwhelm to balance, composure, and vitality. Restore connection and compassion. Open your heart and tap into your limitless power within your soul. Begin your journey at anywheremindbodysoul.com.
Everybody, welcome back. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. First of all, I want all of you to know how to find out more about Echo. Go to the website, echobodine.com, echobodine.com. Very simple. Mm-hmm. When you get there, you're going to be you're going to be struck by the beautiful colors and the message. Trust the voice within. OMG, did I need to have that today? You know, I started my day really quite energized and chipper. Now, what is it in life that can get us off our game? Echo was just talking about it. But when you come here and you take a look, you're going to look at so many things that she is bringing into the world to help all of us become more present in our lives today. Not by creating a life that allows us to take forever to fill our heart's desires, but do you want to know what happens after you die? Do you have a thought about that? Do you want to know maybe what are some of the reasons that folks just don't want to cross over? Echo, thank you so much for today. Also, the book's pretty much available everywhere, right?
Yes, it is.
When you go to the website, certainly you can get the book. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Take a look at some of the reviews. But this is a book that really tackles the question, why are there some spirits that just have not gone through the light, right? What was it about this topic that called to you? Because I know this had to change you to write it. But I know that you wrote this book very clearly to me because you needed to answer questions for people. Am I right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, you are right.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, Penny, you know, to tell you the truth, one day I was mowing the grass. And and this whole thing came into my head about the simple reasons why ghosts remain earthbound. And it was like, oh, I have to help people understand this so that they don't become one. Oh, I mean, it just seemed like such a simple thing to just pull all the information together instead of,
yeah,
I have a little bit of information here, a little bit of information there. You know, Patty, whenever my, I don't do ghost bustings anymore. I got so burned out on ghosts. And, you know, really, honey, it's like ghost counseling, not ghost busting. I mean, how can you bust a ghost? What?
You can't.
Right.
Right. So, I get it.
So what we do is when we've gone into these homes and we see the ghost, we always ask them two things. What's your name and why are you here? And that's how, that's the basis of the book is we're talking about, you know, a lot of people don't even know that ghosts are actually human beings, that they're souls of human beings. They think ghosts are something really scary and horrible. And the truth is, they're people. They're people. And they have their reasons. And, I mean, you know, as you read the book, I think for people, as they read the book, they read the six different reasons why.
Yeah.
Kind of like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, yeah, that makes sense, too. Oh, yeah, that makes sense, too, you know. But, Patty, I mean, don't you think that we've all been raised to believe that we suffer here on Earth and then our rewards are in heaven, this magical Wizard of Oz place? but we've also been taught that, okay, if you're good, you get to go to that really nice place. And if you're bad, you go burn in hell.
Yeah.
And so that's why a lot of these ghosts are just afraid. They're just afraid. And a lot of them don't even feel worthy. I actually met a guy, a ghost, in an attic. He was just this little guy, and he looked all tattered and... And when, you know, I went up to him and I said, you know, hello, who are you? He gave me his name, which I don't even remember right now. And then I said to him, why don't you go on to the other side? Why don't you go to heaven? And he said, well, look at me. He said, I'm a hobo. I can't go into heaven looking like this. And I thought, oh, my God, you poor thing. I mean, it's his belief that you can't look like a hobo and go to heaven. So that's what a lot of it has been, is just talking to these folks and saying, yeah, oh, my goodness, you know, whatever your name is, George, let's say it's George. George, God could care less what you look like. It's okay. Just go. Mm-hmm. And but you know what I did? I said to him, okay, how would you like to look when you go into heaven? And it was so sweet to just watch him and his thoughts. We're creating a completely different outfit on. And said to him, okay, now look at yourself. And he looks, and he was so surprised. And I said, see, go on home. And so he did. He left and went on home.
You know, I love this because you know this and I know this. Ghosts have been the topic of conversations for eons.
Yes, they have.
They may not, thousands of years ago, they may not have been called ghosts. I don't know what the Aramaic version of that is.
Yeah.
Conceptually, you know, there has been the notion, the notion of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we move forward in the world and we look at some of the things that you wrote here, and I love that you gave the ego a place in the afterlife, because there are many people that don't, right?
I know.
Right? They think, oh, I'm here, I got this ego, then I die and I have no ego.
Oh, honey.
But you brought the ego into the afterlife. Can you tell us about that? Because it is fundamentally the basis for a number of these reasons, if not them all.
I know.
Right?
Yes. I don't know why people think that when we die, our ego goes away. It doesn't. I mean, you know, like I told you, one of my friends that died in the last year, he was a well-known doctor,
okay?
And his whole, I mean, he was a doctor, but then his other life here on Earth was all about reincarnation. His company was reincarnation and research, okay? And when he died of a heart attack. He was just shocked, just absolutely shocked. And when I asked him, how are you? All he could think about was his work. He said, well, what's going to happen to all my work? I can't be dead. What's going to happen to my work? I mean, and I said, well, you know, you can carry it on the other side. And he said, oh, this is just so upsetting. I'm so upset. And, okay, so he was on the other side when we were chatting. And he said, I just don't know what I'm going to do. And so if you, Patty, it was so clear to me as I was listening to him talk that this is his ego. His ego was freaking out because kind of like, do you know who I am and do you know what I did? And, well, I've since checked in with him. And he said, oh, I'm so much better. He said, I'm carrying on my work here and teaching about reincarnation here. And so, again, it seemed to me like, okay, his ego is continuing to keep him in this place of importance, okay? And do you know who I am? Do you know how much information I have? Okay, good, now. And so he's continuing it on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt bad for him because it's like, there was no thought of relaxing, maybe going fishing, taking a break. No, it was this drive that he has inside. And our ego does not die when we die. It's part of our personality. And so, you know, it seems to me that in the last, I'd say, 3 to 5 years, there's been a lot more attention about ego. It seems like for many years, okay?
Yeah.
But now it seems like people are really looking at it in a different way, trying to calm it down, trying to put it in perspective. And so I'm seeing that with people on the other side, too, that are working on their ego.
Yeah. And, you know, I think what we're trying to do also with ego is we're trying to, you know, look, for years in the field of psychology, decades, you know, people talked about the ego as something really awful.
Yet
I believe things like ego are given to us not because they're really awful, and they have a purpose, right?
Yeah.
Things have a purpose.
Yes.
Ego allows us to achieve phenomenal things.
Yes.
It also could allow us to achieve phenomenal things at the expense of other people.
Yeah.
But that's why we have a conscience, right? So there are these things that create the harmony of energies. And this is what I love about what you write, because there's this other thing I want to ask you about. Because You talk about belief. And I love that you talk about belief. You know, there was
a belief. Okay. Yeah. I just said belief.
Belief. You know, the idea of this is what you believe. If you believe. Oh. And I love this. There was a fantastic movie that Kevin Costner was in. It was called Dragonfly.
Yeah.
And
yes.
If you watch Dragonfly, right?
Yep.
The entire movie was based on beliefs.
Yes.
And messages from the other side.
Yes.
But
yes.
Belief was an important driver. What he believed in, despite what everybody thought around him. Yes. And so people don't think that that carries over, but you say it does. There is a belief we have before we pass.
Yes.
And that belief can get us stuck, right?
Yes, Patty. So stuck. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's really, you know what? That's why I'm glad I'm doing interviews, because it's so important to ask people, what are your beliefs about death? What do you believe? What do you think? Where do you think you're going to go? You know, honey, really, like even in the book, I write about people who don't believe in life after death.
Yeah.
So they come out of their body and they're like, well, I don't know what to do. I'm not supposed to be here. I'm not, what am I? They don't know they're a soul. They don't believe in life after death. They think, and I've had many people say that to me, oh, once you die, you're done. That's it. You're done. You don't exist any longer.
Yeah, believe me, I know. I've had people say that to me.
Yes. And so these folks are like, well, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know where I am. So that's why it's so important to have these conversations, because I tell you, our beliefs keep us so stuck and so uninformed. And then you know what else is, then we get into this, no, this is my belief. This is how it is. And they refuse to even think about thinking a different way. So that's why it's so good we're having these conversations, Patty.
Yeah. Boy, that is the definition of stuck.
Yeah.
That is the definition of stuck.
Yeah.
When you are so embedded and tangled up in a particular belief or conviction or whatever the language fits for all of you listening, when you are so definitive about something that you can't even be open to an open.
That's right.
You know, you're so in this, right?
Yep.
And we see this over and over, but I just didn't understand this. I didn't understand this aspect of it. You know, there are so many in our pop culture, one of the most, there are two pop culture iconic representations of ghosts that almost everybody, at least everybody in the United States is familiar with. One is Patrick Swayze in Ghost.
Yep.
Almost everybody is like, that's it. And what I loved about that movie is, you know, they took a script right out of your playbook.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't make him to be some organic, you know what I'm saying? They didn't make him some crazy thing.
Yes.
They made him a soul with his beliefs, why he was still there, right, which you talk about. There are reasons that people stay. Maybe it's a possession. Maybe it's an obsession. Maybe it's for another person. That maybe. But why do we have such a hard time at looking at the afterlife life and how these things show up? What gets in our way? Even though we all watch that movie and we're like, yeah, I buy into it 100,000,000%.
Yeah.
I buy into every part of it. Whoopi Goldberg. That's like the whole thing. The bad guy, the ghost, you know, walking through walls, moving chairs. I buy into the whole thing. I've watched it 10 times.
Yep.
But maybe that's not going to be for me. Maybe I'm not going to. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I think what you just said, maybe that's not going to be for me.
Yeah.
That's right where people get stuck is.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe that's going to be that way for you, but for me. You know, I talk in the book about a book that was a bestseller a few years ago by, and he had a near-death experience. So he went over to the other side, and he came back, and he told in his book, he said that heaven, you know, was wonderful, and that what we do, we sing praises to the Lord all day long. That's what they do in heaven, okay? Okay, that's his belief. And he's teaching others that that's what we do when we get to heaven. We sing the Lord's praises all day. Well, okay, so now all of his followers are believing that that's what we do. Honey, I have met teenage ghosts. And I said to them, why are you here? Heaven's going to be really boring. I'm going to get over there. I'm going to get angel wings. I can never go to a party again. The parties are here. There's nothing going on over there. And so I went to a high school that was haunted. There were 36 young souls there. And I said to them, why are you all here? Oh, because this is where the parties are. Heaven's going to be a boring place. Again, that's their beliefs. That's what they've been taught. They're going to teach other people that. So part of the big problem is that we all have different beliefs about it. And people that are in a position of authority, like a pastor, people are going to believe that whatever they say, that's how it's going to be.
Yeah, and let's talk about this for a minute, but I want to just tell everybody, if you're just tuning in, I am here with the most amazing Echo Bodine. We are talking about, and I know Jacob's putting this on the screen too, How to Live a Happily Ever Afterlife. See this book right here, everybody? But this book has a very specific group of messages. And so you have the stories of trapped souls and how not to become one. And that's really kind of cool, because this is from your own experience. This is from you helping, right? Yeah. This is, you know, this is born out of, look, this is the story. This is what I've discovered. This is how we can avoid it, and this is what we can do if we are stuck.
Right.
And, you know, it may be one. It could be all of these reasons you put in the book.
No, no.
But you see, if we understand this, what I hear you saying is, we can do something about this now.
Yes. Oh, gosh, yes.
Right?
Yes, 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 yes.
Because that's what I think you're talking about. It also helps us understand why one of our loved ones may be here,
yes.
may be here, and we get signs of it.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you about that, because people have experience where they get signs. I have talked about an instance with Linda's mom, who is like my mom, after she passed. And Linda and I were in a room, and we were talking about something. And I don't even know what it was, but obviously it was something Joan wanted us to pay attention to.
Okay.
What did Joan do? Well, we're sitting there, and we hear a crash. Like, oh, my God, what broke in the bedroom?
Yeah.
Go in the bedroom. One of the dragon lamps that she gave me,
yes,
jumped off the dresser to the floor, crashed. Nothing was broken.
Oh, God.
Nothing. 2 days ago, now this happened years ago, but
okay.
Now I pay attention when Joan shows up. I don't know where Joan is. I don't know what the message is.
Yeah.
2 days ago, my friend sends me a text message.
Okay.
Wanting to show me the hummingbirds in the backyard of a place I live. So okay. Instead of sending it to me and Linda,
yeah.
He sends the text to me and Linda's mom, who passed, Joan. And I said to Annie, do you know you sent the message to Joan? Now, I don't have a lot, you know, all I know at the moment, when Joan shows up this way, she's trying to get my attention. I'm not quite sure what. But can you talk about this? Because a lot of people get afraid.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Linda and I, we looked at that dragon lamp because Joan gave that to me purposely even before she passed.
Okay. Okay.
So out of everything in my house, it had to be the dragon lamp. That's how we know it's Joan.
Yep.
And it had to not break.
Yep.
But it crashed. So help us understand, when we have these loved ones that are here, they're everywhere, it isn't always like in the horror movies that they're trying to harm us. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes. No, believe me. I mean, think about it. If you're dead and you've got loved ones on the earth plane and you want them to remember you. You don't want them to forget you. And you want to come and visit them, and you want to tell them that you still love them, and, hey, I'm still here, and I'm alive, and I'm happy. And so that's what so much of it is it's just a reminder. It's a reminder from Jonah. Hey, I'm here, and I still love you, and remember I got you this lamp? You know, it's a happy thing for her to be able to do something like that. And that's what our loved ones do. They try to think of something. You know, like so many people think that when they see a red cardinal that it is a deceased loved one. And, you know, even me, when for the last week I had a red cardinal jumping all around the grass. It's a he because it's gorgeous red.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there he is every day jumping around. And a red cardinal was my mom's favorite thing. Okay. So... And people say, well, it's very easy for a soul that is energy. A soul can take a little bit of its energy and put it into the little body of a bird and jump around and do things. The people on the other side, they're very clever and they talk to each other. Well, hey, how did you get your loved one's attention? Well, how did you get her? Well, I did this. Oh, I didn't know you could do that. It's really cool. I mean, they want us to know they're still alive. They're looking forward to seeing us, to being with us again. But in the meantime, I'm still alive. I'm still doing stuff. I still remember the dragon lamp. Isn't this fun, girls? It's kind of like that.
It is. Yeah. I mean, who even knew Annie had Joan's phone number in her? I mean, that is the most bizarre of bizarre things.
Did she know that she?
She didn't know she did it. No, I had to email her back. I had to text her back, and I said, "Yeah, thank you. Great picture. Thank you for the hummingbirds. But did you realize? I did. I had to say." Did you realize that you sent me the text message and Joan, Linda's mom, and Annie knows Joan Kyle, and Joan?
And she said no, she did not.
No. She's like, oh, my goodness. You know, she's like, I did what? But you see, I know enough about things like this to say, oh, it's really not about Annie, and it's not about the text message. And isn't it interesting? Annie is sending hummingbirds pictures of hummingbirds.
Aww.
And so I have to get quiet and just hear what Joan wants to say.
And, you know, honey, so often it's just hi.
It's just hi.
Yeah. I'm still alive. I still exist. But, you know, I've met some people on the other side. They're so worried that their loved ones are going to forget them. So they think of creative little ways to let people know they're still alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I want to get back to something you said. For those of you, again, I want to make sure you know how to find out more about Echo. It's very simple. All you have to do is go to Echo's website, which is Echo Bodine, B-O-D-I-N-E. And once you get there, you'll know you're there. You see this beautiful, beautiful watercolor. And then also, if you scroll down, you'll see the book. You'll be able to get it from Amazon. I want to get back to something you said earlier because I wanted to hear more about it. I know that you cannot write a book like this without it impacting you in a way where you have to change.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just share a little bit about what that transformation looked like for you, what that change was for you?
Oh, man. I mean, I think it's been a lifetime, really. Just little change. And then, but you know, hey, it's interesting that you asked me this because lately, ever since the book came out, I thought, you know, whatever, you know a lot of stuff about death. It's almost like I'm realizing that, oh, I know a lot about this stuff. I don't know why my throat's acting up. God, it just, like I said, honey, that day I was mowing the grass, and it all just kind of came to me that, wow, you know A, B, C, D, E, and F. You could put all this in a book. And, you know, the other thing is I was at a funeral 2 days ago, a week ago, and honey, my attitude is so different about death compared to all the other people at the funeral. And, you know, I saw the guy, he was there, his soul was there. He was so happy that all of his friends were at this funeral. And so I'm seeing him with this huge smile on his face and, oh, he's so happy. And I remember at a certain point, I went, oh my God, wait a minute. Everybody's here. They're crying. They're sad. They're lonely. They're freaking out. And I'm standing here watching him smiling because he's so happy to see everybody. And so, you know, sometimes I have to watch my enthusiasm about the soul because I get excited, you know, I get excited for souls when they when I go through that transition.
And I totally love that we are able to have a conversation like this where, you know, once upon a time it wasn't okay. But you see, you know, there are so many things that have opened us up now, you know. People want to talk about the downside of social media and the downside of the internet, but honestly, in so many ways, it has brought us closer because it's given us information where we can find common ground, where we can have conversations about things that we couldn't have with our parents, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't know about you. I was very fortunate to have my stepmom, and we could talk about the afterlife, and she had her own perspective on heaven and hell. And her view was, girls, y'all don't have to worry about hell. We got it right here. That was her perspective. It's like, don't worry, there is no hell.
That's right.
You're going to go through some stuff in this on this earth, and you're going to get through it, and you're going to live some. You're going to have some great things happen, but you will have to go through the fire, is what she would say.
Okay.
So her view was she had already paid her dues. There was no way she was going to what anybody referred to as hell.
Yep.
I'm not asking for her. And that was her story, and she was sticking to it.
Good, good.
That was it. But she had no conception,
okay,
or at least wouldn't share with us what she meant by heaven.
Okay.
But what she would share was a place of total bliss.
Yes.
That was her view.
It's amazing.
And that's really what I want to say in the couple minutes we have left, because you really touch upon so many things. And there's one in particular that I think if people are struggling with this in our earth skin, it's not going to go away, and that is being terrified of change. And you talk about that, right?
Can you believe it, Betty? Some of these souls
I know people, and what is the ultimate change? Death.
I know, but they say, no, I'm not going. I don't like change. Honey, did I write in the book about the guy, the ghost, in the 54 Chevy? I can't remember if I wrote about it or not. This guy, ghost, he lives in his 54 Chevy on Earth. Because he said, no, I'm not leaving my car. It's like, oh, my God. And when I told his wife when I went in the house and I said, do you know that your husband, she goes, yes, he loved that car more than any of us. Okay? He doesn't want any change in his life.
Yeah.
So he lives in his car.
Yeah. So here's really the kind of the cool thing. I'm like, when I go, I'm taking my Harley with me.
Okay.
Right? And probably I'm going to get a new one when I go.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, I love that what you've done is you say, look, be aware that these are the potholes you can create for yourself now in this earth skin, because if you create them now, and we say this, everything is energy, even our thoughts and even our beliefs. So why wouldn't they, beliefs, energy,
why wouldn't that energy transmute to where we go? Isn't that what you're saying?
Yes, ma'am. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we can change it.
Yes, and if you want to have a brand new Harley in heaven, you can do just that. Yeah,
I know I can. I I'm going to have so much fun on it, too. Echo, I can't thank you enough for joining me here today. Thank you for tackling a topic that a lot of people that talk about this realm are really afraid to talk about.
Yeah.
But you see, what you brought forward is not just another book about the afterlife, but you brought an empowering book forward that says, wait a minute, you can be empowered in this life, and you can be empowered in the afterlife.
Yep.
Thank you for doing that. I'd love to have you, again, tell people how they can get the book. And then I would just love to have your personal message. What do you want to leave us with today?
You know, okay. People can find the book anywhere, especially Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
You know, the coolest thought came to me this morning when I was meditating. I was reading my text before I meditated, and somebody had sent me a thing and said, I'm full of anxiety today. And I emailed back and said, you know, what is it about? Oh, they didn't know. And into my head came the words, you need to be able to call it by its name so you can call its bluff.
Yeah.
Good one, huh? I thought that was a cool thing to say. Thank you. So you can call its bluff.
Yeah.
So
you're absolutely right. Because what's the opposite of that? Complete avoidance and denial.
No, honey. And just being miserable. Just miserable. So once we can name it, then we can call it bluff. So for all the folks out there, what are your thoughts and beliefs about death? And, okay, once you can identify what they are, is that what you want them to be? And if not, change it. Change it. You can change it. You're still alive. You can still change your beliefs. So that's what we all need to be aware of is, what do we really believe about death?
Mm.
Yep.
Thank you. And thank
you're
you for
welcome.
The stories.
Yeah.
I could see why that guy was in his 54 Chevy. That was a cool car. I want to just tell everybody, please check it out. Go over to echobodine.com. Not over your, when you go there, it's going to be more than the book. Take a look at the courses, some of the things that she's offering. Also, there are other books, other things for you to plug into if you go over there and check it out.
Yeah.
And take a look at what she is creating to connect all of us with our spirit nature. Thank you, Echo. Thank you so much.
Oh, girl, thank you very much. This has been so much fun, Patty.
Totally fun.
Thank you, honey. Thank you.
I want to thank Benny. Thank you, Benny, for pushing all the right buttons. Jacob, thank you. And thanks to all of you out there. Again, what I want to say to you is, look, these are the stories in here that tell you about what keeps us trapped in a place we do not want to be trapped in.
No.
Echo's going to show us the way out. Thank you for tuning us in, turning us on. We'll see you next time, everyone.